Although I'm a licensed professional counselor in the state of Texas, this podcast is not therapy and should not be used as therapeutic intervention. Many of the products and practices mentioned are for educational and informational purposes only. Should you need support, please seek appropriate, qualified, and licensed professionals. Hey, y'all. Welcome to Between a Hot Mess and a Therapist, the podcast where we navigate the murky waters between what society expects and what it means to truly live, embrace the messiness, the beautiful chaos of life, and celebrating the rebellion in the process. Whether you're a recent graduate, a seasoned therapist, or someone just curious, there's something here for everyone. But before we dive in, make sure you join the Hot Mess Rebellion community where you can connect to other like-minded souls. I'm your host, Shauna Lovin, a seasoned therapist and wellness educator with a very rebellious spirit. So grab your favorite beverage, get comfortable, and let's dive into today's rebellion. Hey, y'all. Welcome back to another episode of Between a Hot Mess and a Therapist. Today, we are doing something a little bit different. We are talking about the same topic, burnout, secondary trauma, and compassion fatigue. But hopefully today, you'll get something new, different, and you can use it with either yourself or with clients that you actually work with. This was a CEU that I did a while back. So if you're interested in collecting that CEU for this, make sure you hit us up in the Rise of the Misfit Maven Collective. There's going to be a link inside of the description for this podcast. Enjoy.
So let me start over. If we haven't met, I'm Shauna. I am a supervisor, and Stephanie has asked me to come speak with your group. We kind of randomly picked the topic, but it's fitting because we are always connected to burnout, or, you know, it's just part of us and our lives and who we are. So I have a little bit of a different spin on the topic itself, but we can kind of take questions towards the end, but let's get started. Okay, so just housekeeping rules. I always want everybody to know that this is a safe space, that I want to encourage you and to participate and all the things. I want you to be able to do that, okay? And be honest. So when it comes to burnout, secondary trauma, as well as compassion fatigue, here are some of the major issues that therapists deal with. I'm not going to go into great detail, but I want you to keep in mind about the stress, anxiety, and depression piece, because that's going to be important a little bit later on. We all know what those are. If you're in this field, these are some of the major ones, or the most common ones, that are actually going to come up. Okay. So we're going to go through a couple of just working definitions so that we're all on the same page and understanding what we're talking about today. When it comes to anxiety and depression, I like to put it on a continuum. So on one side, you know, if you were to say 0 to 10, on the side of 0, you would have maybe someone who is suicidal, thinking about it. Maybe they're a little bit active, and then it moves more into depression. On the other end, on 10, you might have someone who's manic or just kind of like what I say, over the top. And then moving on down through anxiety. Now, life brings us ups and downs. So sometimes we have moments where we're a little bit sad or depressed. And sometimes we have moments that we are a little bit more elevated and excited. I like to say we need to live somewhere in that middle, 4, 5, and 6. That is a good place for most of us to live every day, kind of be content, be happy, all the good things. So we're keeping this in mind. So we know trauma is an experience that we have had. All of us have had some form of trauma, and I'll get into that in a second. But it's just a situation where we've all experienced, and it's affecting our daily functioning in many ways. The big thing that we have to keep in mind when it comes to trauma is that, we've all experienced that because it is, I'm losing my train of thought. We all experience trauma because of ACEs. And if you guys remember ACEs, that is your adverse childhood experiences. So it's stuff like physical abuse, sexual abuse, and emotional abuse. It's neglect or emotional neglect. It's someone in the household with a mental illness, domestic violence, or divorce, substance, incarceration, and the newer one that they've put on is suicide. So these are things that we've all experienced. And when it comes to trauma, since we've all experienced it, about 20% of people move into what we would say is PTSD. And so just because we've experienced trauma doesn't mean we'll automatically have PTSD. So when it specifically comes to burnout and therapists, there was a Simple Practice did an actual study where they were looking at therapists' well-being, and they found out that 52% of therapists have experienced burnout in the last year, and then 29% were saying they were currently experiencing it, and then 49% said it's been since COVID that they've felt it even more. Some other interesting facts that come in here is 60% say that it was the work-life balance. That's why they were experienced burnout. 55% said it was because of admin task. 54% said it was compassion fatigue. And 44% said it was low pay. Now, I might agree with the low pay just because they don't pay therapists enough. Even starting out, they just don't pay enough for the work that we do. Some other stats that fall in this category is 33% is the severity and complex clients, and we just don't want to deal with that. So a lot of people say that they're experiencing that because of the clients. 25% are saying there's too many clients and there's a high caseload. And then 8% said that there were challenges navigating licensure, which I can imagine because it's always changing. And so the interesting part about this too is that SAMHSA said they, in their study, it quoted like workload, the control that they have over their job and what they do, maybe not necessarily being rewarded at work or not having the community or fairness or values at work. And then so that kind of leads to job satisfaction and turnover and absenteeism. So those are some things that come under that. A few other things that we want to mention here is that most therapists that are experiencing burnout are feeling drained, emotionally drained. They're not engaging in personal activities, and they somehow have figured out how to modify their schedule. And then they're putting more boundaries in place with clients. And again, not taking severe or tough clients. The interesting thing that came up, though, was 86% said that they are engaging in self-care, but they're still experiencing burnout. And I thought that was kind of weird, but we can talk about that maybe a little bit and why. 57%, this was the other interesting fact, is 57% say they plan to leave the field in 5 years. So that's kind of disheartening a little bit, just because it's like, you know, if you're a new therapist and you're coming in, but you're hearing something about people are leaving, I think it's because we as therapists aren't treated very fair. And I think that's a huge problem. Okay, so let's keep moving. So what is actually burnout? It's not just about feeling tired. It's not about, you know, feeling emotionally, physically, mentally drained or prolonged stress. It's a little bit more than that. It's really, when you think about it, it's the body's way of talking to you, and it's connecting to what are societal norms or what we should be doing versus what our body says that we don't want to do. And then there's the expectations and the experiences that we have. So it's like all of a sudden we start experiencing that we don't want to have these experiences that we're having because it's just too much. And so we get physically, emotionally exhausted, and we get this sense of disconnect. So what are a few symptoms of burnout? So again, chronic fatigue, maybe it's detachment, maybe just feeling overwhelmed, like we're climbing Mount Everest or something like that. And then we also have to think about that culturally, things could be different too, because sometimes when you're overwhelmed and you don't keep pushing and pushing and pushing, it could be a sign of failure for some cultures, because, or a sign of weakness for some cultures. So we don't necessarily prioritize our well-being and our self-care because of that. So what is secondary trauma? So this is the other piece. This is when you, as a therapist, you are hearing, listening, witnessing someone else's trauma. And for therapists and first responders, helping professionals, it's hard for us to get away from this, because you got to think about that. We are experiencing our clients probably on the worst day or the worst time in their life. And we hear all the stories. We hear all that. We hear the abuse. We hear the alcohol. We hear about incarceration. We hear about that stuff. But we have to be able to find a way to kind of help our clients through whatever their situation is. But at the same time, it's affecting us. So we are absorbing their pain, their suffering. And this is where transference comes in huge, because someone else's trauma could trigger you and whatever you were dealing with as a child or at some other point in your life. So we have to be mindful of transference. So when we combine the two together, burnout and secondary trauma, this is what we consider compassion fatigue. So I found a couple slides that really explain what it is. And so the thing is that compassion fatigue still looks just like everything else. Sleep problems, self-doubt, we feel overwhelmed, we have anger, there's depression, there's anxiety. It has the same exact things. But the difference is with compassion fatigue, there's a behavioral, emotional, and physical element. And so when we learn to manage our lifestyle, we learn to prevent compassion fatigue, and then we can learn to manage the burnout piece a little bit better. So here is a good kind of chart I found kind of a few years ago or several years ago that kind of explains, you know, is it really burnout or is it compassion fatigue? I don't have the author's name of this because I've had it a long time. But basically, the biggest thing that you see is as you go through the chart, when someone is experiencing burnout, there's a sense of like the lack of feelings, the lack of there. That's really the huge difference between that and compassion fatigue. It's like, where do your feelings sit? If you don't have any, if you have the emotions and the things that are still there, then it's compassion fatigue. If you don't, then it's burnout. That's the easy, probably the easiest way to explain the two. All right. So as we move through this, one of the things that comes up is polyvagal theory. Have you guys heard of that? Put it in the chat and let me know if you've heard of polyvagal theory. I don't remember if I was in school, if we actually talked about this, but this was something that I learned kind of like after the fact of school. No. Okay. So polyvagal theory really is just a concept where your nervous system is It's the central nervous system that we have, and it's our body's command center. It does everything. And so what happens is with the polyvagal theory in particular is that the vagus nerve, which runs from our brain all the way down to our root space, and all the connections that it has, it helps us regulate our body. And so when it comes to burnout and it comes to secondary trauma and compassion fatigue, one of the easiest ways is to activate our vagus nerve. And on this chart, again, I don't take credit for this. I find some really good stuff. But when we are in a place where we're doing okay and we are functioning well, we're in that green space, meaning our parasympathetic nervous system is functioning well. It's doing the things that we need to do. But if we are hyper aroused, we're in flight or fight. And so that means our sympathetic system is making us feel, I would say, depressed in state, like meaning not moving or moving, trying to move. And then on the opposite end, we are not moving. We're in the kind of more dorsal vagal space. So keep in mind that we can move through each piece, but we want to live in that window of tolerance, kind of in our ventral vagal system part. Okay. So the thing we have to also remember is that because this is our highway, that, you know, when we suddenly get overwhelmed, we suddenly get depleted, it will trigger our vagus nerve in some way or another. So I have found that activating the vagus nerve is the easiest way to kind of manage burnout and secondary trauma for a few reasons. Like I have, when we activate the nerve, we are reducing inflammation. When we reduce inflammation, we are reducing the diseases that come. We're managing stress and anxiety. We are, you know, it's a way of saying this is how our body works. And again, we're activating our parasympathetic nervous system. So here are just a few quick ways of being able to activate your vagus nerve. I have found the easiest access points would be through the neck, like the neck, throat area, and your belly button. But in particular, humming, singing, mantras, chanting, gargling, and laughing. Cold water, so think like a bath, a shower, or just, you know, water on your face. Yoga, meditation, exercising, shoulder shrugging, muscle relaxation, and rebounding. Rebounding is like when you're kind of jumping up and down, kind of on a trampoline. Breathing, that would be belly and box breathing, EFT, which is your tapping, as well as your butterfly tapping. Foot massages and heel drops. Heel drops is kind of like when you're walking and you kind of walk on your heel, kind of like that. Being mindful of your gut health, intermittent fasting, omega-3s, and probiotics. Dim lights and sleep routine. So this one becomes important because this helps set you up for a good sleep routine. You know, an hour or two before bed, you want to start dimming the lights. You want your body to start to shut down or signal that it's time to shut down. The last group I have are social connections with our safe people. Taking yourself on solo dates, finding someone who accepts what you reject. So if there's something that you don't quite like, but you know someone who does and they are a safe person, I would tap into that. The last one here is boundaries. The huge thing about boundaries in particular is the boundaries aren't for other people. The boundaries are for you. So whatever you decide your boundaries to be, those are for you in particular. So another way that we can manage our vagus nerve and our manage our burnout and everything like that is to start developing resiliency skills. And so really what we're trying to do is we're looking at mindfulness, self-compassion, and a compassion for common humanity. These are some of the resiliency skills we should develop. Another place would be gratitude, or gratitude journaling, and then helping others. Now, the interesting about helping others is that there was a study done, I can't remember what year, but it says that if we help people, 43% basically decrease their risk of death and increase their health just by helping other people. So that's pretty cool about that. The thing about resiliency that it is, we have to be persistent. We have to kind of stay on top of how we're managing ourselves with the burnout, compassion fatigue, secondary trauma. We have to stay on top of that. The other piece is that we have to be intentional. And this is something that I talk a lot about, is like, I understand that we can say, okay, I'm going to do all these things to manage myself. However, if you're not intentional about it, then what good does it do? Because you set yourself up, you set these goals, these resolutions or whatever. I don't like calling them resolutions or goals, but you set these things up and then you don't follow through. So then what happens? You kind of fall off the wagon. So we have to be intentional about what things are we doing to manage ourselves appropriately. So if we are looking at how can we kind of, outside of activating our vagus nerve and outside of resiliency, how can we continue to manage? How can we embody kind of like what we're doing? So the first thing is that we all have something in us that we can live outside of the box. We are put as therapists and going through grad school, we often are put in this box where, you know, this is what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to go to school. And then when you graduate, you get a job working for someone else. And then like, that's it. And you have low pay. Well, I'm here to tell you, no, you have to figure out what is outside of the box for you and kind of go against that. The other piece, why I like my little picture that I have here too, is like self-care is an act of self-love. And the way I would describe self-care, it's your vehicle that you need to get to self-love. So again, what is outside of the box that is against the status quo? Okay, and then so another one is we're going to lean into our support system. The thing about this is that we are not alone. I mean, you guys have created community with other associates. Find people in the community to support you. You guys do things together, go on nature walks and hikes and, you know, meet. I heard you guys met up somewhere and kind of had a good time. So find your community, lean into that, because when you feel yourself kind of falling to the wayside a little bit, you can lean into your community to kind of help you. The last one is basically, again, setting boundaries. The thing about boundaries is, again, they are for you and not for everybody else. They are something that I think everyone needs. And sometimes we have a really hard time of setting boundaries. This comes with setting your fees. This comes with boundaries with like your clients missed. And what does that look like? This is, you know, setting a hard start and stop time for your work. This is responding to emails. This is all the things you can think about when it comes to running a practice or being a therapist in practice, where boundaries become important. Because if we're not following our own boundaries, then this is why what can lead to burnout. Okay, I know I was probably talking like really quickly, and I hate when I do that, but I want to ask, does anybody have questions? And let's kind of start moving into like a little bit of a discussion. I'm happy to be here and answer any questions that you guys have. Okay, and then so Stephanie asks, have I ever experienced burnout? And if so, how did you overcome it? So I would say, yes, I have. And the interesting thing was that I really didn't realize that I was experiencing burnout because everything was a blur. And it wasn't until I was, I don't know what I was doing. I was learning about something else and came across, and this is kind of how I got back into the polyvagal theory, and was reading about like, well, here are some things that you could do to, you know, kind of get your vagus nerve moving. And what happened was, is I started to realize like, wait a minute. All of the things that I was doing, right? Like all of the things that I was doing that were on the list, I realized I wasn't doing them. And then when I started doing them again, I realized that I was experiencing burnout. And so I have been more intentional about making sure that I am doing things to kind of keep myself more regulated. My associates know that I've gotten into human design more recently, and I've learned through human design that part of my design is that I need more rest. And so it was learning the difference between resting versus being burnt out and what the difference is specifically for me. So, yeah. So I just kind of really just started doing all my activities again, and I started to feel better. How often do you believe we should be practicing self-care in a larger scale? Every day. Every day. So, and I think that's the misconception of how that looks or why it looks. But if we are intentional about having, say, a morning routine, a night routine, and everything in between, or moments in between your day that you do, and you look at more smaller increment moments, then overall you should achieve better self-care. Again, self-care is the vehicle for self-love. So I say every day. Like most days I try like one thing, and then the other piece to that is having non-negotiables. Like what are things that you do to support yourself that are non-negotiables? So one of mine is walking in the morning after I drop my kids off to school. Now there are some mornings I don't do it, like the last few mornings because it's been cold and I'm just like not going to do that. But I wake up, I put walking or exercise clothes on, I drop them off, and then as soon as I'm done with that, I go for a walk. Because if I don't do that in that order, then it won't happen. So unless it's raining or super cold, I won't go. Another non-negotiable that I have is, because I work pretty late on my regular 9-to-5, I work from 10 to 7. And so because I work pretty late, my whole nighttime routine is a little bit later. And so before I go to bed, I'm intentional about, you know, washing my face, brushing my teeth. That is my way of resetting every night. So we have to remember that self-care doesn't necessarily mean I'm getting my hair done, I'm getting my nails done, you know, and spending all this money. It's the intentional things that we're doing throughout our day to just kind of help us reset. Before we do that, I just want to say thank you for you guys with your time with me tonight. And I hope you guys were able to take something away, even if it's just one thing. And I really appreciate that.
All right, y'all. I hope you got something out of today's episode. I want to make sure that you keep shining your light and not let others tear you down. Until next time.
Thanks for joining today's rebellion with me. Remember, it's okay to be a hot mess sometimes. It's all part of the journey. Until next time, stay rebellious, stay authentic, and keep embracing the beautiful messiness of life. Don't forget to join the Hot Mess Rebellion community, where you can connect with other like-minded souls. And anything mentioned in today's episode will be linked in the show notes. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, you share with a friend, you leave a review, and you keep coming back for more. This podcast was brought to you by Healing Roots Wellness and Botanicals.
For more information, please visit healingrootswab.com.